Steve G. Jones here with John Harry Charan and Yanni Maniatis, and we are probing the mysteries of the universe. We've got two great minds, two great spiritual leaders, and I'm going to turn it back over to you guys. Yanni and John, take it away and enlighten us more, if you will.
Thank you, Steve. As always, it's a pleasure to be here. And Yanni, I'm glad you're here. But we'll continue here by doing something I wanted to do. I wanted to recap a few steps that are simple that anyone, just almost anyone, could do. Everybody could do this. And this will help you to develop your intuitive faculties. Okay? And then after that, Yanni, if you could tell us what you suggest to people, that'd be great. So to recap, I've put together seven steps, really. I did this a long time ago because I used to teach people about intuition and how to tap into their intuitive abilities. So here's the first thing. Naturally, you can't do all seven. If you can, that's great. But if you can't, substitute something. The first one is find a quiet place. Now, actually, that doesn't mean a quiet place physically. Because remember the example I gave about those machines? It was very, very noisy. But even with that, the noise disappeared and I could hear clearly. So find a quiet place in your mind or in your room or at your desk or something. And number two, breathe deeply a few times. Just a few deep breaths. That's more relaxing than anything else. Number three, quiet the voices in your head. You're having a conversation constantly, even when you're listening to me. Like right now, there might be a voice in your head said, "My goodness, I hope he doesn't take that much longer. I got to go and do this." Or another voice might be saying, "You know, I wonder what he's going to talk about." Or another one is saying, "I'm not even hearing what John and Yanni are saying, or Steve, because I am so worried about all these other things." So you quiet those voices for a few minutes in your head. And I think the next one you do, because this is simple, remember a pleasant experience. Just walk through the hallways of your memory. And I have not met anyone on earth yet who did not have at least one pleasant experience. Just remember one. I have had a lot of them. I've had a lot of lousy experiences too. But remember, the subconscious does not know the difference of something really physically happening in time space right now or something we're imagining. So remember a pleasant experience and imagine that while you're remembering that time has passed and it's now weeks or months in the future and the problem you're dealing with doesn't exist anymore. You know, that happens. Tell me what you were worried about 6 months ago on this day, on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday, Thursday. You don't remember. It must have been very big, but you don't remember it. So go ahead a few months and think, the problem has passed. The problem is gone. I'm in the future now. So you let go of the problem. And then you go about your daily tasks with a feeling of expectancy. And be aware of the hunches and ideas that you receive, the signs you see, like the one Yanni mentioned where his wife saw the sign that said time to move. And if she hadn't been observing or she wasn't aware of it, she probably wouldn't have moved from her job and would have been as miserable in that as she was before. So these are just a few very simple, basic things. And with that, I will ask Yanni, if he could give you some guidance and some thoughts and pointers on from his perspective of how to do these things, how to develop your intuitive abilities. Would you, Yanni?
Yes, thank you, John. I'd love to. In order to understand anything, we kind of, if we're communicating, we need a language or a frame of reference in order to be able to get meaning from something. And intuition may seem to people, because it seems to be non-logical, to be something that you can't replicate or that you can't have a formula for to kind of, so to speak, tune in or pick up on. But actually, you can create a language of intuition. And as we all know, a picture is worth a thousand words. And actually, the right brain works with pictures. And so what I'm about to share with you is something called a template technique. And it's kind of similar to what I already shared with you about the yes or the no. You know, you just put up a picture of a yes or a no and then see which one lights up. But here, I'm going to share with you what I call the rose template, the flower, the rose. And I'm going to share with you the rose template. And what this is if you're wanting to kind of get an idea of a person you've just met, want to get a feeling for them, so to speak, or even if you want to get an idea of how somebody is doing that you know, what you do is you kind of quiet your mind, as John said, and kind of clear it of all the clutter, as he had just said, and you imagine that individual to be a rose. And again, you're using your imaginative faculty. You're not anticipating here. You're not trying. You're not forcing anything. And you just imagine, just think of somebody now. You can even do this now if you're in a quiet place. Just pick someone that you want to get a tune in, you want to tune in for. And imagine that they're a rose. And then just see what kind of rose are they? What color are they? Are the petals dried out? Or are the petals just really beautiful and sensuous? Is the rose planted in the middle of a desert all by itself? Is it rainy or is it sunny outside? Is the rose in a beautiful rose garden? Or is it kind of underneath a tree and there are a whole bunch of trees surrounding it and suppressing it from getting the light, the sun? What kind of rose is it? Does the stem have a lot of thorns on it? Or is it without thorns? And if you just suspend using your critical faculties here and just allow your imagination to run wild, you will see a rose that represents this individual, and you'll have a feel for them. And again, if you see them and it's raining and stormy, or if you see them in the middle of a desert, or if you see them on an ice cap, it's saying something to you about them and how they really feel. And I know I've taught this technique to numerous psychotherapists, and what they do is before their client or their patient comes in, they tune in and see what kind of rose that person is that day. And then when that person starts speaking, they already have a heads up on how they're really doing, and they can ask them questions that help them to more quickly get to what's really on their minds or really bothering them, rather than kind of masking it or denying it or hiding it. So for you too, whenever you're about to enter a situation with a person that you know or that you don't know, you can just throw up the rose and get a feeling for what's going on. And I might just give you a little shorter version of this technique. With my wife and my son, I work here out of my home, and before they get home, I'll always tune in for them, and I'll put up an image of my wife, and I'll look and see if she's smiling or looks tired or looks sad or depressed or angry. So I kind of know what's coming home and what I have to kind of deal with. And or with my son, it's the same thing. Like sometimes I can't make it to some of his baseball games. I don't have to be there. All I have to do is just put an image of his face up there, and I'll know how he's been doing. And then I'll ask him and I'll say, you know, whatever, you were happy or you look sad. What happened in the game? You look sad at one point there. And then he'll tell me, yeah, I made an error or whatever. Or you were happy. So yeah, I had a home run or something. And over time, as you play with these things, it really works. So again, a picture is worth a thousand words. Intuition is not just something that happens willy-nilly to just some people. But you can actually, as you play with, and I prefer to use that word rather than work with, a template. It can be a rose. It can be any other object that you want. You can imagine people as an automobile, and that would tell you whether they're, you know, have a sports car or whether they have an old beat up old Volkswagen bug, and that will tell you something about them if one of those images show up. You can get a real sense for a person before you meet them or before you see them again. And then that can help guide you in your interaction with them. You can be more present for them. You can be more prepared for them. You can be more able to make something good come out of the interaction. So, again, I hope this template technique begins to give you an idea of what you can do to help you tap into your intuition.
I like that very, very much. You have made it so simple. Now I'm thinking, while you were talking, I'm thinking of friends, people I know, and I'm thinking not of the rose, but as much as a car. Oh my goodness, there's a 1982 Ford. Ah, there is a 2010 Lexus. That's a nice one. Thank you, Yanni. I like that. I think you are probably a Rolls Royce. And yeah. So is Steve, a Maserati. This is a good way. And what you did there was to show in a very playful, actual, non-serious way. People take these things too seriously. They think, you know, I got to work at developing my intuition. It's so boring. Well, it's not boring. It's a part of, like, saying to yourself, oh, gee, I'm hungry, and now I got to go eat. It's boring. No, it's not boring. It's life-affirming. It will guide you through dangers. It'll save you from making a lot of silly little mistakes and some very serious ones. I remember some investments I made where many years ago I did not listen to that still small voice within me. I just went ahead and did it because I was too anxious and thought that this is great. I'm going to do this. I just know exactly what to do. And something was saying to me, don't do that. Don't buy that property. Hold it for a second. And, oh, gee, I just overrode the thing. Remember, your intuition is not your master. Your intuitive faculties are actually your servants. They will help you, but they do not force you to do things. Just like anything else, you have the free choice. And you can say, yes, I will go this way or I will go that way. But if you get a little nudge as to which way to go, it makes it a lot easier. It's much, much easier. Do you remember the Rubik's Cube of years ago, Yanni?
Yes, I do. And I was useless trying to do that.
Now, a simple little thing that someone talks about, a just-in-case thing. You know, also, I too was sort of useless trying to get it together. And, you know, you run out of time and say, ah, this thing doesn't work. But here's something that was referred to. I think it was in the book called, again, Beyond Supernature. And they talk about Doyle or somebody else describing this. Just consider a Rubik's Cube. And all the combinations that that thing has. And you have to get it just right. And think to yourself, because I want to compare intuition or the use of intuition to this voice. Think to yourself that there are also, and I think they had this on television many years ago, some of these super smart kids who could I remember the record was about 23 seconds, do just get all those things in the Rubik Cube correct. I mean, just do it that way. Now, if you were to do it randomly, it will take you generations to do it. But here's the thing. Let's say you're an ordinary person, and you're standing and you have this Rubik's Cube in your hand, and you start turning the sides and the little boxes to match each other. Now, I don't know if everybody know what's a Rubik's Cube. Check it out. It's spelled R-U-B-I-C. And it's still popular today, has been popular for many, many decades. So just in case, just check that out. So you have this in your hand, and you're turning it, and you're twisting it, and so forth. And you get one side done, and the other side goes out of sequence, and back and forth. But let's assume that this is a blind man doing it. Okay, to make it even more dramatic. There's a blind man with a Rubik's Cube. Now, he can't even see. But what he does is he stands and he makes one move. And behind him, to his left or right, is one of these whiz kids who could do this in 23 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes. And here's this blind man. Remember, he can't see. He's handicapped by sight. And he makes one turn. And if it's a correct move he makes, nothing happens. The whiz kid behind him says nothing. He makes another move, correct move. The whiz kid says nothing. He makes a third move, which is wrong. And guess what? The whiz kid just whispers one word, no. So he just reverses what he was doing and makes another move, and it's correct. Makes another one, and it's wrong. And the voice, the kid behind him says no. And he reverses it, and he continues doing this. They have calculated mathematically how long it would take for this blind man with just that simple guiding voice just saying no, 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 nothing else. When you're doing it wrong, it says no. When you're doing it right, there's a quiet. It doesn't say yes. It will take just a few hours to do it with that guiding voice behind him, just telling him where that he didn't make a correct move. That's the voice of intuition. Now, you want to know how long, by pure chance, it would take for the blind man to do it randomly by himself without any guidance? Approximately a few hundred times the age of Earth itself. It will take almost forever to be able to do it just by accident. But with that still small voice or the genius behind you just telling you, no, no, being quiet all the time, not shouting at you, hey, Yanni, hey, Steve, didn't you hear me say no? No, it just says no. And if you don't bother with it, it'll say no again and no again, because the voice of intuition is like a still small voice also. So I think that let's consider life a challenge or a game or whatever it is. And whenever you are going to make a wrong move, if you listen to your heart and your soul and the energies within you, and you get quiet for a moment and you just breathe and you thank the universe for giving you all these abilities, you thank God, and you just stay quietly, you will hear. Maybe not at that moment, unless it's an emergency, but while you're maybe in the shower, maybe you're working on the computer, maybe you're taking a walk, maybe you're washing dishes, and all of a sudden you hear, oh my goodness, that's what it was? And you say, thank you. That's how the voice operates. The small voice, the still, really quiet voice. It doesn't shout. Yeah, once in a while I think it does, because when I was about to run into a big 18-wheeler truck at 65 miles an hour on the highway, a voice shouted to me, and the voice said, John! And I jumped out of my almost falling asleep to avoid a very serious, maybe fatal accident. There are those times. But generally, in the normal progression of life, I think the voice whispers to you. And so you don't even have to worry about whether the voice is there. It's like saying, you know, I'm breathing. I wonder if there's going to be air in the next minute or two or tomorrow. I should worry about whether there's an abundance of oxygen around. Yeah, sometimes we wonder about that, but generally speaking. So you don't have to worry about the presence of the voice. The voice, in my opinion, is always there. What you have to do is learn to listen to it. Now, after you listen to it and you get the message that says no, you can choose, like the blind man who was trying to fix the Rubik's Cube, you can choose to do exactly the opposite. The voice doesn't say, oh boy, there he goes. Look, hey, stop. Don't do that. No, the voice is neutral. It's trying to help you. It gives you the information. It will not make the decision for you. Do you find it like that at times too, Yanni? The still, small voice that whispers, intuition whispers to us?
Very much so, John. Yes, very much so. There's a little brief quote from Jonas Salk, you know, the person who found the polio vaccine. Mm-hmm. And he says, intuition will tell the thinking mind where to look next.
I like that.
Yeah, and I'd like to actually read a little more of what he said, because it fits into what you were saying here. He wrote, it is always with excitement that I wake up in the morning wondering what my intuition will toss up to me like gifts from the sea. I work with it and rely on it. It's my partner. And this is a scientist. When I worked on the polio vaccine, I had a theory. I guided each experiment by imagining myself in the phenomenon in which I was interested. The intuitive realm, the realm of imagination, guides my thinking. And then to repeat, intuition will tell the thinking mind where to look next, or, as we're saying, where to go next.
And that's from once a very respected scientist. Wasn't it the polio vaccine that he came up with, if I remember
correctly? That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
There are many of these famous people who trusted their intuition. Now that you mention that, I remember Dr. Joyce Brothers. Some people on this call or on this who are listening to this probably remember her also. She said once, "Trust your hunches. They're usually based on facts filed away just below the conscious level." Or if you want to go back to one of my favorite people, Albert Einstein, who said, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift. The rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift." And that's no other than Albert Einstein. And if you want to go biblical on me, this is from the Old Testament, the book of Isaiah, I think, chapter 30, verse 21, where it says, "And thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, This is the way, walk ye in it, when ye turn to the right hand, and when ye turn to the left." It's almost the same as with the Rubik's Cube. No, it's saying to you, no, this is wrong. This is not the way. Don't go into it this way, which means the other way is the way. Because generally, this is what happens. You can eliminate ways and ways, or decisions, or choices until you come down to two. There are always two. You might think there are 15 choices, but by a process of elimination, pick the worst one, drop it. By the time you're finished with the process, there are only two choices. Use your intuition to figure which it is. And I know people like Churchill used his intuition, was guided, saved his life also. When one remembers the war in South Africa, where he was involved, and even in the World War I, I think he was in that one too. I mean, he was so old that he was in every war you could think of. He was a warrior. And there are other people who use this. Why can't we use it all the time? I tell you why, because we forget. Any comments on this, Yanni?
Yes, John. I mean, I'll give you another quote. in the United States, the Charles L. Schultz, who was a former director of the Office of Management and Budget for the United States, he wrote, "Forced to choose among irrelevant alternatives on the basis of misleading facts and without the benefit of solid analysis, even the best judgment can do little but grope intuitively in the dark." And I think we know that you have to wing it sometimes. And you have to kind of just, you know, intuition is kind of interesting. I sometimes say, you know, we're all flatlanders. We all want to just kind of walk on solid, flat ground. And when something comes up that's new or challenging, we don't want to go to the edge. We want to just stay on the flat ground and not risk anything. But what intuition does is it allows us to not flatland it, but to actually realize that when we do come to that edge, if we can just trust what we feel, that actually that edge is not an edge. It's just the beginning of a circle or a round sphere that you can walk on solidly. Or if you do jump off that edge, you will have wings. And this is what intuition gives us. It gives us the wings to kind of live our lives creatively. And another quote I really love is from Thomas Merton, the Trappist monk, who writes, "Life is not a problem to be solved. Life is a mystery to be lived." And so we can't script it all the time. It doesn't work. We can't control it all the time. We've got to allow it to just unravel, I mean, to unveil its mystery to us. And if we live in that intuitive realm, we can enjoy the mystery and the majesty of our lives. And I'm going to throw in one more quote, and then I'll turn it over to you, John. Okay. And this quote's kind of interesting. I'd been using it for about 15 years in my classes. And then maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, I was reading a report John wrote on intuition. And there was the same quote. And I know it's one that he really loves, too. And it's by the co-founder of the Findhorn community. Her name is Eileen Cady. And she writes, "Cease trying to work things out with your minds. It will get you nowhere. Let your whole life be led by intuition and inspiration. Let your whole life be a revelation." One last comment. Once one learns to live trusting the intuitive muse or the oracle within, life becomes magic. It's no longer a script, but it's an opportunity to experience inspiration and revelation moment to moment. And for me, that's the gift of intuition, you know, being able to live a life of just wonderful majesty and mystery and yet trust.
That is a wonderful way to put it. Very well put, Yanni. I think your knowledge and your expertise and the way you teach this over the years, I have seen and heard you talk about this. It is so simple and it's so wonderful, and it still to this day puzzles me that we do not take 5 minutes or 10 minutes every day to hone our capacity to really get messages from the universe, if you will. And it's so simple. It's like if we were not to do that to with the craft we are involved in, for example, those who are in sports, they practice a lot. Those who fly planes got to keep flying them, or else they'll get rusty. And so in the use of intuition, the more you use it, the more it grows, the more you can rely on it, the better it is. And from some of the stories I told you about my personal experiences, it could be a very, very good life-saving thing. If you are in trouble of any kind, you will get the answers. You just have to listen. And I think anyone, anywhere, at any time could start developing this. You don't have to say, I'm going to put aside 2 weeks to study it. You just start every day, do one little thing, just look up. You could even try to say, there's a car that's going to be passing me on the highway. Let's see. It will have numbers on its license plates and letters. Let me see if I could pick out one of the 6 or 8 numbers, whatever it has. One of the numbers would be 3. And when you look, there's a 3, and you'd say to yourself, well, of course, there are only 10 of those numbers, so my chances were 3 and 10, so I got it accidentally. It doesn't matter. You keep trying it, and after a while you'll see, that's interesting. I keep getting this right. Then you pick the letters. Just use anything to play around with and to just practice it, to get that faculty of intuition, if there is such a faculty or area that controls it, to start working. And the more you work it, and the more you trust it, and the more you trust the process, and the less you doubt it, the better it is. And I think that's basically what it is. And Yanni, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to join me this evening on to have Steve here with us. And I'm sure he's listening in the background someplace. Steve?
Absolutely. I'm very attentive and taking it all in.
Well, I am glad, and I want to thank you both again.
Of all the people I know in my life, you live so majestically and mysteriously and intuitively, and it's such a blessing to know a person like you who lives in this really miraculous, mysterious, wonderful way. Thank you for being who you are.
I am honored, deeply honored. Thank you.
Yanni, how can people learn more about you?
They can go to my website, which is www.insideoutjourneys.com. That's inside, I-N-S-I-D-E, out, O-U-T, and then journeys, J-O-U-R-N-E-Y-S.com.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Yanni, thank you. Yanni Maniotis, we thank you so much for being here today. And on behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and our guest interviewer, Yanni Maniotis, and our beloved John Harry Turan, we wish you an outstanding life.